Dark wings.
Dark words.
A Game of Thrones podcast.
Season 5, Episode 1.
The Wars to Come. Welcome back, one and all. We have reconvened. Fabulous Dark Wings, Dork Words crew, at least three quarters. I am your host, Chuck Davis, and with me this week are...
Craig McCallie.
Mike Hergert.
Cat King,
woohoo!
Yay, woo!
The part of Chris Voorhees this week is being played by Cat King.
I'll lower my voice.
Chris got so much prettier over the last year.
Oh, thanks. It's the makeup.
So, Kat, you're our first feminine POV podcaster in many seasons here on Dark Wings, Dark Words.
Yep.
Represent.
And you are, among us, the only one who hasn't read the books.
That's true.
So you're playing the crucial Phil Jonak role of frequent viewer, never reader.
Right. But I think you said you wanted to read the books, though, right?
At some point. So, if that counts for anything.
Which Phil has had no interest in that. So
that's true.
So yeah, I've started them. I just haven't finished.
I feel like we spoiled stuff for Phil sometimes, and he didn't really care. But Kat would.
He came back.
Kat will care more.
And then he quit.
So he would shy away from even watching like what's coming up next week.
Yeah.
He wanted to be as unspoiled as possible.
He's part of the unspoiled. The roving gang of mercenaries for hire.
I was going to say naive, but I like unspoiled. It sounds like unsullied.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Quite.
You got it.
So I want to get your take on this episode, obviously. But before we delve into the new season and the new happenings, this is your chance to maybe recap some of your thoughts about the show in general and what you're anticipating from this season.
Well, I don't know exactly what I'm anticipating from the season, but I do know a big thought that comes from this particular episode is that freedom seemed to be a theme throughout it. That the King of the North,
Mance,
he had a strong feeling that, you know, he would not bend the knee and he wouldn't demonstrate to his people that they were going to be subordinate to this king. Whether they choose to follow him or not was going to be up to them. And they were going to do it as an independent, you know, the freedom to choose. And what did he say? He said, I want the freedom to make my own mistakes.
Right.
All he ever wanted, he said.
All he ever wanted was the freedom to make his own mistakes. And there was Arya's freedom where she went off on her own. There was the theme of freedom with Daenerys and the people, and she set the slaves free, but they came back and wanted a certain level of what they were familiar with, and she struggled with that. There was even Tyrion's freedom from his father, freedom from the tyranny of his father. Good one.
freedom to drink himself to death and not have any more responsibility ever. Yep.
The escape, the freedom of that. And so I just thought there's probably more that I'm not even thinking of offhand that I just kept kind of thinking there's a real strong theme of freedom. So that's a thought from this one. Anticipating for the rest of the season, I have that unspoiled naivete where I just really have no idea. I think there's going to be weddings, funerals.
In general, you can always expect
murder,
there's
sword
a wedding.
Fights,
betrayals,
blood. There will be blood. So, those are my initial thoughts.
Maybe this episode was so freedom heavy because the creators had just got done watching Braveheart. Maybe not.
Maybe. They went back. What, man, that movie's about 20 years old now, I think. They really went back and, like, let's watch that old Mel Gibson thing before he was racist.
You know what, man? Freedom.
Before he was racist.
Yeah.
Freedom.
Before he was racist and sexist and and all anti-Semitic.
What's wrong with being sexy?
Sexist. Sexist.
The subtle twist. Maybe there's some of the freedom theme in the dragons being locked up, and Daenerys has some residual guilt about that. But obviously, she's just scared to death of her dragons
now. Not just guilt.
I don't feel like we were going to see any dragons today, this early in the season.
Well, we got a good dose of some CGI there.
They got their budgets up.
That might be the only reason we saw dragons, because they were just there for a second.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there was even a direwolf spotting, too, which is the first couple seasons were pretty spotty with that stuff. He was just kind of chilling outside, laying on the ground.
Ghost was?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't spot
chewing
him.
On a bone.
Yeah, like I think when John was fighting the kid or whatever in the yard.
Yeah, I saw it too.
One of the few remaining Night's Watch men that is recognizable. Who's the other guy? Basically the last of John's buddies, besides Sam, that's still alive.
I didn't notice.
Donald?
Dolorous Ed.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So we've got Ed, we've got the young boy who killed...
What about this new cocky Sam? I don't know, man. No, I'm just kidding. You know who I am? I killed a fucking White Walker, and I killed a giant. So up yours.
So I'm not going to go out there and get beat up with a wooden sword in front of my girl. Yeah. No, I'm good. I'm a hero.
I'm not just a. Trust me. I'm not a new recruit. Cookies.
Right. Mm-hmm. Seasoned. Well, we saw most everyone, I guess, that still survived the first four seasons. We didn't see Arya yet, but we know she'll be coming up next week. Who else are we not going to see?
Bran, I don't think we're going to see at all.
Bran's going to be out of pocket. He's gonna
be... Bran, no Hodor.
God, how old is he going to look the next time we see him? He's probably the person who's aged the most in real life, like looks-wise.
Yeah.
He's going to be like driving a car.
His voice will squeak.
He's going to pull up, like, what's up?
Yeah.
We didn't see Reek.
Right.
That's probably the last remaining kind of prominent character that's got stuff going on. But we know that Stannis is going to mobilize and try to retake the North from the Boltons. Mm-hmm. So we'll see some Bolton action at some point this season.
Michael Bolton.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
I celebrate the man's entire catalog.
We're going to see a lot of Dorne action this season. A whole new cast of Dornish characters that those of us who read the books were introduced to in A Feast for Crows. Kind of the whole profile of a whole another kingdom that we just got a taste of last season. With
a nice, horny kingdom. Super sexy everything.
Mm-hmm. It's so hot down there. I mean, you don't... Don't want to wear much clothes. Yep. So
it's always spring break.
Yep. Well, summer break.
Summer break.
They opened with a cool flashback of young Cersei going to visit the witch woman, Maggie the Frog, which she was ruminating upon on her carriage ride to her father's funeral. Mm-hmm. So what do you think of the prophecy there and the impact it's going to have on Cersei and her outlook?
She already feels, I think, you know, that Margaery is plotting against her all the time. And
perhaps.
Because of that. And, I mean, she's always kind of had that in her mind. You kind of get that more of that sense in the book because she always thinks back to that prophecy and is like,
yeah,
I have to prevent this from coming true. And I feel like she probably thinks that Margaery is the one that's going to come, the younger, more beautiful princess who's going to dethrone her, basically.
It's sort of some new insight into Cersei's mindset from previous seasons.
Yes.
Where she has always been suspicious of Margaery.
Yeah, for the people who just have watched the series, not read the books, they now have kind of maybe they were all just like, oh, Cersei's just a real bitch all the time. But, you know, if she's been carrying that around since childhood, waiting for this to happen, and now she's like, great, here it is. She's just, her fears are realized.
What do you think of her reaction? I mean, she's still all fired up with her bottomless hatred for Tyrion to the point where she's outraged at Tywin's death, even though it's probably something she secretly would have longed for.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the last conversation she had basically with her dad was, I'm going to tell everybody about Jaime and I and our relationship, and that, you know, she's like, I'll burn
the house down.
Yeah, I'll mm-hmm. burn the house to the ground before I'll go back to Casterly Rock or whatever, or, you know, marry.
She was defiant about right. refusing to marry Loras, but she yep. didn't really have any power or plans that we were aware of to back that up. She was just kind of being defiant in general. But now she's free to, you know, basically not have Tywin around to tell her what to do. Mm-hmm. But she's still very morose because she's presumably, in the context of this episode, just ruminating on what Margaery's going to do.
So why was she so hard on Jaime? She went from last, you know, the last episode of the last season, you know, like, I told Dad about us. I love you. I don't care that we're brother and sister, too. Like, admonishing him for, you know, your father, he loved you. Like, it's almost as if we can't be together because you love our brother too much or something. You know, it's not that we're brother and sister. So I thought it was interesting that she kind of turned on Jaime. You know, I'm being a little facetious about it, but she turned on Jaime and kind of pushed him away when she had just kind of...
She was just trying to win him over.
Yeah.
But I think she... Maybe that's kind of... You know, I just said she didn't have any plans, but her plan was basically to re-win Jaime's loyalty to stand with her against Tywin.
Mm-hmm.
But this isn't what she had in mind, obviously.
Right. And right. So no, that makes sense. Yeah.
She's guilt-tripping Jaime big time for letting Tyrion off the hook. That's what she's yeah. really upset about.
Yeah, that
about.
Makes sense, yeah.
It shouldn't work, but it might. I mean, Tywin was the least bad to Jaime out of all of them, probably, like Cersei alluded to.
Yeah.
So Varys popping out at that moment.
Varys' absence has not really been acknowledged yet in King's Landing
yeah.
that we're aware of.
But I mean, you know, he's a renegade now too, right?
Oh, yeah.
Definitely. I mean, and he basically boldly, well, I mean... Maybe not so boldly, just sort of in secret to Tyrion, revealed that he's sort of been angling to help Daenerys mm-hmm. reclaim the Iron Throne and is trying to recruit Tyrion in that. Basically, just based on you can either drink yourself to death or you can help me with my project, because I think you'd be a kick-ass
hand
consigliere to
mm-hmm.
Daenerys Targaryen,
basically.
Yeah. But that's great. I mean, I think they did a good job of sort of establishing motivations for a lot of key characters. I mean, mm-hmm. John is just kind of lost right now up at the wall, and as is Sam. Sam was talking a little bit about the succession of who the new Lord Commander is going to be.
Yeah.
So we can anticipate that.
Some politicking and stuff for that, yeah.
And we saw the dickhead walking around with Janis Slint just kind of... Mm-hmm. bitching about how crappy his...
Two dickheads.
Alistair Thorne.
Alistair yeah. Thorne. Sir Alistair. Gilly said, that one doesn't like me. I thought for sure Sam would say, he doesn't like anybody.
That's what I thought he was going to say, too. Tell it word for word. Yep.
I thought it was interesting, John sort of viciously training the young boy. I thought maybe sort of venting some of his frustration having watched him kill his true love.
Right.
But no.
At the end of it, he put his hand to his face. I mean, there was a genuine affection there. But I still thought the same thing. Like, he's getting a little bit of that aggression out, but, you know, he's a good kid.
I think he was feeling it, too, and he checked it yeah. and basically
that kid
tussled
probably,
his hair.
Yeah.
Probably single-handedly changed the course of the history of the show or the, you know, the timeline mm-hmm. of the mythology more than anyone.
Oh, yeah.
Pretty much, you know, he's like... Just a single shot from the bow.
I thought there might be a weird parallel there when they cut to John with the bow. I thought he might give Manus a little nod that the boy gave John when he killed Ygritte.
Stannis gives him that look.
Then it turns out it's just a Gatorade commercial.
Well, I mean, what's going to happen with Stannis and Jon Snow? What kind of tension has been created there?
Ooh, yeah.
Thinking about anticipating for next
scenes. John's got to be in trouble. A pretty fairly big trouble, yeah. I would think. You know, Stannis is really, maybe some would say, overcorrecting or overcompensating for certain powerlessness. But he's doing what he needs to do to get what he wants to do. But
yeah, it feels very strategic.
But while he's in the mood to make examples out of people, that's probably a bad time for Jon to do that, you know. Yeah.
Right, because Jon's really nothing right now. I mean, he's just
yeah.
Ned Stark's bastard son.
Right, I mean,
he has no power position, he's just...
He has established himself as somewhat loyal to the wildlings, I mean, in front of them. Mm-hmm. So if anything, from a strategic standpoint, and I can't think of what it was exactly, but I know this has happened at least once before with Stannis. He can forgive. He forgave his assistant. What is his name?
Davos.
For something because it was to his strategic advantage, and I'm not remembering the specifics. But in this case, I think that he might be able to be aware of the strategic advantage that Jon Snow can help him actually win over the Wildlings somehow.
Well, Davos was kind of fired up about Melisandre is sort of corrupting Stannis, and no one's going to do anything about it. And through his sort of love and loyalty for Stannis, he thought it was his duty to assassinate Melisandre, and he was prevented from doing that and thrown in the dungeon for an episode and a half or so.
Yeah,
and then
that's right.
But he approached Stannis with the whole idea of let's go to the north, and that's kind of what won his freedom again.
Well, Davos was about to be executed. Remember,
that's right?
And Melisandre was like, you know what?
You need him.
We're going to need this guy.
Yeah.
So never
That's
mind.
What it
and
was. Yep.
Stannis just throws his hands up in the air and is like, okay, God, whatever. Make up your mind.
One thing they it seemed like a missed opportunity to reinforce Melisandre's agenda to basically be an evangelical for R'hllor, the Lord of Light. Like, you know, they had established that they were burning people on Dragonstone that had not converted to her religion.
Mm-hmm.
And there was always kind of the creepy prayer chanting that they do to R'hllor whenever mm-hmm. they burn people. So I thought they would do that when they were burning Mance, but everybody just kind of morosely stood there and didn't say anything.
And yeah,
I mean, I don't know if anyone there really is on Stannis' side as far as that goes. They're all, you know, the people from the wall, well,
the Night's Watch.
The Night's Watch aren't behind him. Obviously, the Wildlings aren't behind him in any way. I'm surprised they kind of stood there and watched, in a sense.
Right. I mean, Stannis is kind of he's plotting and trying to decide what his next move is going to be. And his plan, he revealed his plan,
right,
is to recruit the Wildlings to give them citizenship in exchange for helping him retake the North from the Boltons.
But doesn't he have no choice now but to slaughter them wholesale because they refuse to join?
Well, Mance refused to join. So that was one sort of gambit to win them over, and that failed.
So now he'll ask them directly.
Right.
You can choose to follow me, or you can choose this fate.
Mm-hmm. And they've basically established that Tormund is sort of the next in command, or like he's basically representing the will of the Wildlings. And there's going to be some more talk with Tormund,
but
I'm sure.
He's nuttier than Mance ever was. Mance was at least pragmatic and, you know, I don't want people to die. We just need to get south, period. But Tormund's just like, blah! I mean, he'll never bend the knee.
Is Tormund the big ginger?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And certainly...
Tormund the big ginger.
I'll really be upset if the Wildlings look to Jon Snow as any sort of leadership role. I don't think they'll do that, but...
Well, when they had their little chat at the top of the wall... They basically said, you know, many of these men respect you, or these men look up to you. Oh, they're good men. But half of them hate you as well. So that's sort of laying the groundwork.
Sympathizer.
Wow. Yeah.
Well, Jon Snow has such divided loyalties. It's interesting. He's loyal to the Watch, the Night's Watch, and then he's loyal to the Wildlings, and that he's loyal to the Watch. You know, it's just like, and then he's asked by Stannis to...
Well, that was the whole last season for him he was put in an impossible position,
right?
You know, to go undercover and identify with the Wildlings, which
he just lives in an impossible situation.
Exactly. I mean, he's been torn all along. Even once he was sort of committed himself to the Night's Watch, then hearing about all the horrible things happening to his father and his brother and his mother and his sisters, there was that great scene where he sort of went AWOL and all his buddies rode after him and talked him into coming back through, you know, his loyalty to the Night's Watch.
That conversation he had with Mance that last season that humanized Mance a lot, and especially when Jon had gone there to kill Mance. So against the backdrop of that, then Mance comes back with a real, like, listen, we just want to live. We have to get south of the wall. We don't want to kill anyone else. We don't want to be killed. This is a pure survival instinct. And then Jon was like, ah, you know, I mean, he was sent there to kill him and ended up
Yeah, like, John
this
was,
guy's fine. This,
John
this,
was
this
all ready
guy.
To assassinate Mance, basically, to put an end to the aggression. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, yeah, from one episode to the next, his loyalties have to just fluctuate. Right.
But then to watch him be burned to the stake after that, I mean, that's... You can't do that.
He cut him a break.
He did.
Of sorts.
Yeah.
Where do you think Littlefinger is taking Sansa?
I don't know. I mean,
where could he be taking her that's so far away that Cersei couldn't get to her, if not across the Narrow Sea?
Right.
Which is, like, wildly off book.
Yeah.
If that's the premise.
Yeah, that's...
And they very rapidly sort of established...
They really get rid of Sweet Robin real quick. They just ditch him in the
that's
first
right.
episode.
Thank goodness.
Yeah. if I never see that kid again, I'll be
We
I'll
all
be
breathe
happy.
A sigh of relief. Yeah, the idea of just seeing, like, the little... Oh, God, that kid. But, you know, just the molly-coddled, little, overly precious, stick a sword in his hand and make him fight in the yard. Mm. That was a good sort of fitting.
Yeah, he's an archetype, though, of that molly-coddled kind of royal prince. He's gross. That's all I got. It's just, I mean, but it's, there's a lot of archetypes here. I mean, the torment and divided loyalty of the bastard son, because we can go back to even Reek and how he's had, I don't even like calling him Reek, Theon Greyjoy, how he's had such divided loyalties and he's trying to be loyal to something and he just keeps falling.
God, what a
down.
Tragedy that
yeah,
out of everything.
I didn't see him in this episode and I thought, oh, maybe he died. I don't remember exactly what happened to him, but... That's one of the hardest storylines to watch or to follow.
They when we last saw Theon, Ramsay was
basically... I mean, his sister came to try and bust him out, right?
Right. Yeah. And he
was that the last time we saw him?
But he was fully reekified at that point and was unsavable.
Straight reekified.
But then Ramsay comes along and he says, like, I need you to pretend to be Theon again to help
oh,
us
that's
retake
right.
Moat
Cailin.
Oh,
that's right, your hardest mission.
Mm. Your greatest acting role.
Ugh.
So presumably the Boltons were able to retake Moat Cailin. That happened on the show, mm-hmm. I think.
Okay. There was an axe to the head.
And then it wasn't maybe really well explained on the show, but basically Moat Cailin is kind of the stronghold that guards the neck.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the strategic defense point to prevent armies from the other kingdoms from entering the north.
And right. It's kind of where like Jojen Reed and Mira are from, because I feel like it's a swampy.
It's right on the outskirts of the swamps. Where the
I
Reeds
know it talks
live.
About like the frogmen and stuff when in the book when they're going to retake that. So and their poison spears. So I feel like that's kind of that.
What's the name of that? Swampy land that the Reeds hail from.
I need my maps.
Yeah.
I'm so adrift. I'm sort of disconnected from all of my precious book knowledge.
Right.
I only read A Dance with Dragons once, and that was 2 years ago.
We're fighting a lot of things. The fact that they're the least celebrated books, we're rusty. It's not our fault.
But
it can happen to anyone.
There's rich material from those books that they're plowing into this season, for sure. So I don't think we're going to see... there's plenty of stuff from the books for them to work with to get through this season, for sure.
I can't wait to see what happens with Qyburn's monster.
I know. But we haven't seen that yet in the books at all.
Right.
So that might be on...
That might be where they skip ahead from, because you know that's where it's going to end up. I mean, it's already been said that this season's going to surpass the books, so
It could. Well, but I think it's going to surpass it more just to expedite some storylines. The Littlefinger and Elaine, is that what they're calling Sansa now?
Yeah,
It's
supposed to be like his niece,
his daughter.
His daughter.
She almost just had a cameo this time. I mean, she had like two lines.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
very short.
Yeah. Oh, so she's his daughter and. As far as everyone's concerned?
As far as everyone else knows.
Yeah.
That's right. And so, yeah, he quickly consolidated power after killing off Lysa.
Mm-hmm.
And they, so that scene where he's sort of handing off Robin to one of the Bannermen of the Vale.
Yep.
Who was that Banner? Particular Bannerman? We've seen him before, have we not?
Wasn't he part of the council or the court? Yeah,
I'm sure we've seen him at the Eyrie at some point.
I think he looked familiar.
Interrogating Littlefinger,
right?
And Sansa came in and did her. You know, where Sansa grew up, finally got some strategic sense and stepped in and saved the day, saved his ass anyway.
So that's kind of a whole, you know, that's Sansa's future is basically she's in the position now to get the tutelage from the master Machiavellian mastermind that is Littlefinger, but also creeped out by his groping little fingers.
Yeah.
I don't know, man.
I mean, she's playing it cool. I mean, and he, as is he, that's just a weird dynamic that what's happening there. I mean, Littlefinger is to be loathed. Mm-hmm. All the shit that has befallen the Starks,
he's bad. He's a bad person.
Is on his head for betraying Ned.
Right.
And I think she's smart enough to know that.
But she doesn't know that it's specifically his doing. I think she still trusts him as a savior of sorts because he basically, in her eyes, was his savior that rescued, or her savior, rescued her from the clutches of the Lannisters.
I can see that, yeah.
Who she rightly...
I want her to be smart enough.
I mean, no, she's. I think Sansa's still like really, really naive and like doesn't. You can tell she's kind of coming around like at the end of last season where Littlefinger's I'm going to teach you this stuff.
Well, see, that's one of those things that you've seen, like from the very first book. It's one of those heroic moments that you can anticipate. Is you want Sansa to come into her own and basically avenge her father in the most cruelly deceptive way and give Littlefinger what he's got coming to him. That basically, you know, win over his trust
and then learn
from him and screw him over in masterful. I mean, the Starks, the few remaining Starks have such a vengeful arc that has yet to be fulfilled.
Right.
Oh, that's very true.
So it's up to Sansa and Arya to basically avenge the rest of their family.
Well, Arya's working on it.
Yeah.
Her cruelest maneuver maybe so far was leaving the Hound to his... To his slow death, you know?
Yeah.
She did kill him. Just not the way he wanted.
Right.
That was powerful.
Yeah.
And what a different path those two sisters have taken since the very early days where Sansa is sewing and Arya
and they were anecdotal at first, and now they're just couldn't be less.
Oh, it's crazy. They won't even know each other when they see each other again.
Mm-hmm. If they ever do.
Yeah. If they ever do, right.
Yeah, I mean, that's just it. That's what was so heartbreaking about the Red Wedding and the death of Kat and
Rob
is because
Arya's almost there.
Rob was the one that you also had that vengeful arc that you just were sure he was gonna, he was the good one that was basically you're rooting for if anybody taking action in the Seven Kingdoms that you wanted to ascend to the Iron Throne. You wanted Rob to be the sword of justice, to bring peace to the Riverlands, and that
he would have somehow lowered taxes and got all the government programs funded. He would have done a balance of budget, everything.
And he's so handsome.
And making all the right choices and decisions.
Marrying for love instead of political prowess.
He had it all.
Man.
Didn't he?
Don't mess with the phrase.
The phrase have a come up and a coming. Show
they do, but I don't know.
But not this season.
Yeah.
Brienne.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And Brienne's looking for Sansa, and then her and Pod basically see the little wagon train that has Littlefinger and Sansa in it, just drive by, unbeknownst to them that Sansa's actually in here.
You know, Brienne. Sometimes those juxtapositions that we talk about. They're too much. She just killed the Hound, and now she's just mopily sharpening her sword and saying she doesn't deserve a. She didn't say
well,
that.
She's not a leader. She had Arya within her grasp, and she got away.
Yeah. Well, she's really disappointed
but Arya,
in herself.
But not just because she got away, but basically Arya, that encounter undermined whatever she was clinging to.
But it wasn't Brienne's job to talk Arya into anything. It was just her job to go. Try to help, you know?
Well, I think that she just finally realized the sort of pointlessness of trying to fulfill her promise to Kat now that cat is dead.
Don't you just let go at that point, like so many other characters have done when they realize they can't do? Like Tyrion's just like, you know, I'm not into any of this anymore. I'm gonna get out of here. So at that point, don't you just, no matter how noble you are, don't you just kind of be like, well, I did my best.
I don't know. I mean,
not Brienne.
Well, I mean, Tyrion is heartbroken, mm-hmm. You know, and devastated, and as is Brienne in a way. I mean, she basically mm-hmm. she said it, you know, that there's no.
Said all the good lords are dead, and
but
the
she's
rest
taking
are
it
monsters.
Out on Pod. Why take it? Don't take it out on Pod. No, come
she
on.
She just let him do what he does best, so well.
He's the best fuck in the realm. Don't take it out on him.
She's just loosen up a little bit.
Well, according to a bunch of
Pod the Rod.
Pod the Rod.
She'll learn. Those two will make a great couple.
She will not learn.
She will not learn. But Brienne is so amazing. I mean, that fight with the Hound. We rewatched that episode right before this one. It's the best combat scene in the whole series, and it's all thanks to that actress, mm-hmm. who I should probably know what her name is.
Was it Mike Tyson who bit off somebody's ear?
Yeah,
I thought Mike Tyson on his
ear. I thought you were going to say, was it Mike Tyson that played her? And you were Mike Tyson. Straight face, so I thought you were serious for a second.
That would have been better.
So Brienne's a fan favorite, and it's clear that she's going to be a presence this season. But from the books, I don't know if there's a whole lot left for her to accomplish unless they start inventing things for her
to
do.
Which I absolutely think they will. What you do for fan favorites.
There's a super key encounter that she might have.
Yeah.
That
would I feel like I saw some stuff for the next week. It looked like there was some sort of...
Somebody was trying to ride Pod down.
Yeah.
So there's action. There's things for them to do, and so we got a glimpse at Lancel, who we've not seen for many seasons.
He's a sparrow.
Sparrows.
He's our introduction to the concept of the sparrows. What did you think of that, Kat?
There's a lot of religiosity in this show, and they do a good job of that as well. It sounded like a real evangelical. Sounds more like the red. Melisandre, she's very evangelical, but
did he come across as monastic at all?
A little bit monastic, but more ascetic, where, you know, go live in the caves and let go of all everything. But it was interesting to me that Cersei just was so dismissive of him, and he is, because of his forgiveness of himself and his conversion to this kind of radical aesthetic religion, that he seemed to be revealing secrets. And I don't know if she genuinely didn't know what he was revealing to her, or if she was just like...
She was just blowing him off.
Just like,
okay,
let's not talk about it.
Yeah, that's the feeling I got more of, but...
But he was basically... That was a not-so-veiled threat that he was giving her. He basically...
I can see that, yeah. Okay.
He was telling her, you know, like, you know, I've atoned for my sin.
It's time for you to do the same.
Remember when I helped you murder your husband, the former king?
And she's
well,
like, nope.
You know, that...
I see. Okay.
You know...
What are you talking about?
My faith, you know, there's either forgiveness or justice.
He's on,
so
like...
So he was basically inviting her to atone for her sins.
Right.
Or else face the consequences.
Do it the sparrow way.
She's just pissed at everyone. Just everyone's
like
against
five
her.
Of the program.
Yeah.
Step five.
I expected Lancel to be a little more.
He
in the books, he's like really sickly, and like, I don't know that I've seen him again since.
He never recovered from his wounds at the Battle of the Blackwater.
Right.
And
he's just kind of like a sickly, skinny, you know, kind of.
He was in the books. It's more depicted like he found religion like on his deathbed,
right?
And then he miraculously didn't die, but he was like a shadow of his former self.
Right.
But he was looking pretty hot in his robe.
Maybe it's more important that there's just some metamorphosis instead of what the metamorphosis actually is.
Right?
You know, this character is different now. Well, they've done that a lot. They've, instead of going with what the way that it was in the book, when there was a change, sometimes they've said, let's change him, but let's do it in a more actually crowd-pleasing way, usually, I think.
Except for that Dario change. I like the first Dario.
Right.
Well, he went on to play a young Jason Statham in the
Transporter?
Transporter, yeah.
That's really what became
He got
him.
A big screen offer, and he bit off immediately, and much to his chagrin. Now I hope, because who the fuck even knows what... that other movie is.
Because this is the season of Dario.
Yeah.
Yeah, and this is the show of the decade, you know? Like the TV show, maybe along with Breaking Bad, but I would have, well, I don't know what I would have done. Somebody out there make that choice. Get a hold of me.
The tables have turned. Once upon a time, any actor would forego the small screen for the big screen,
yeah.
But
not now. It's a steady paycheck, and if you get on a big show, I mean, it's not.
Well, especially HBO.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. HBO.
I mean, because you see, like, I forget the actor's name who plays Peter Baelish, but I mean, he was on The Wire.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, get a job on a good HBO show, and you'll get recycled into. Once that show's over, you're gonna get in another one. So.
He was a former HBO person, and the actor who plays Mance was on Rome as Julius Caesar.
Okay.
Those are the only two HBO people I can think of on this series.
But it happens in other series, like Omar from The Wire is also on
Boardwalk Empire. Quite so. And maybe we'll see some of these folks on the next season of Veep.
No.
Directly following Game of Thrones.
After Silicon Valley, actually.
That's three series premieres tonight.
Yep.
Back to back to back. So well done, HBO. As long as we don't see anybody from True Blood on this show, I'll be happy.
Right.
Poor True Blood just ran itself into the ground super hard and fast.
It got really campy really fast.
Yeah.
Let's never mention that show again. We saw the Sons of the Harpy appear.
Yes, that was cool. That was a very effective scene where White Rat got his throat slit down Nip Slip Alley.
Oh.
At first, I thought maybe they had replaced.
Yes.
Never mind slip. Like,
I thought that was Grey Worm, and I was like, wait, it's a different guy now? Like,
he did look a little...
He really
like
filled out.
Yeah,
like, and,
yeah, except for that.
I was afraid it was Grey Worm, new actor, new casting.
That's what I thought right off the bat, too. I was just going to say no.
And who's the personal assistant to...
Misende.
Oh, Misende?
God,
Misende.
She's
she came down,
she's,
and
she just
she's like...
She wants to know the secret.
How come some of your bros are trying to get laid? You would... I mean, what's up with that?
Which, I don't even know why they had that scene in there, really. Unless they want to do something, but...
They're building that relationship between Grey Worm and
Misende. I don't know why.
Because, love conquers all.
Okay.
Because let's get that top off.
I feel like I'd rather have him. But I mean, it's completely I don't even know that any of that's in the book. So I feel like they could spend two more minutes on something else.
Well, that's one of the, failings, I guess, of HBO's approach to the show is. I don't know, trying to squeeze in romance where it didn't exist or, you know, it's almost always a failure on this series compared to the way it's depicted in the books.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
I've ranted at length about where they went wrong with Shay and Tyrion, where they went wrong with Rob and not Jane Wisterling, whatever her, his girlfriend's name was. They've played up the nudity of Sir Loras and his
There was a lot of
bed companions.
There was a lot of naked man butt in this episode.
Still no ambiguity about Loras's preference. Yep, still
right. And
still
and he
going strong.
Loras.
He seems to think everybody else is in on it. So what's the big
deal?
Yeah,
he's like fuck it, whatever.
Everybody
Everyone
knows.
And Marjorie shows her proclivity for not being afraid to ogle a nude dude.
And then Marjorie kind of has that line like
getting lewd with food
at the end of the. Mm-hmm. bedroom where it's like, oh, you know, well, you're going to be stuck being Cersei Lannister's daughter-in-law or whatever. Mm-hmm. And she's like, perhaps.
And partnered with, tied with that omen.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just dovetailing perfectly with that, where it's like,
that's right.
Oh, we don't know what's going to happen to
that's
Cersei.
That's keeping us guessing.
That...
It's like, is Cersei paranoid?
Mm-hmm.
No, because Margaery is shrewd. And there's no reason for anybody to not want Cersei to be dead.
Right.
Marjorie is everything I want Sansa to be, but they're really opposite. I mean, Sansa is really naive, and Marjorie is very, very cunning, very shrewd.
She's good.
Well, it's true of the books too. Basically, we all want Sansa to get her shit together and be badass somehow, but she persists in being ineffectual.
Mm-hmm.
which is frustrating.
Right.
Because, you know, we're not going to wait another five seasons for her to do something cool.
You know, a lot of people, and this might inspire discussion because you'll counter it, I think, Kat, but a lot of people feel the same way about Daenerys. Daenerys is not a fan favorite. She is, there's a group of fans out there that champion her and hope that she'll be, you know, make it all right, just like Varys is saying, but a lot of people can't stand her character. They think she's...
she just sits around in Marine.
I mean, she just is doing it all wrong, right. You know? And some of the stuff that her own, quote, people now brought up, the old man that brought up with her, like...
Sir Barristan?
No.
No, the old guy, the old slave. The old guy
that visited her, and he said, I want you to sell me back into slavery. Mm-hmm. And she's like, are you kidding me? No, I didn't come here and to free you guys to see you go back to the slaves. And he shrugged and said, but it's what I want. Yeah. And but she's you can do that for a year, and that's it. You know, so...
That's a leadership decision. She's basically acknowledging that she didn't think it all through necessarily, but she's trying to come up with a compromise. I'm 100% in Daenerys' corner, but I like that in this episode they're showing her for the first time. Well, for the first time she showed her uncertainty in the season finale of season 4. With the young girl's bones that are brought before her, and she realizes that she can't control Drogon. And in this episode, they underline that with her running in fear from the other dragons.
Yep.
I mean, she wants to basically prove that she can be a good leader by taking this very difficult environment that she's created in Meereen and being determined to set it right. But everything's stacked against her, basically. And I honestly, that's the whole reason why George R.R. Martin is stuck on this next book, because he doesn't know how to get her out of the trap that he's put her in.
I think she's been a very powerful character. She's been the maiden goddess, the Artemis. She's had a lot of power, and she's a little, not necessarily naive, although yes, a little bit of that's in the mix, but just real green. But she's so powerful. I mean, think about the making it through the fire, you know, the unburned and the dragon's eggs. I mean, it is manifest how powerful she is, and she's been handed this power. So she's somehow blessed or cursed, you know, with this. It's otherworldly in a sense, you know, whereas we see Melisandre, who seems to be invoking it and channeling it. We have Daenerys, who just is channeling it. She just is a receptor of whatever this power is. And
well, she's kind of an agent of fate, basically.
Yeah.
I mean, the fact that the dragons fell into her lap and that she was the unburnt, and so she has a sense of fate and destiny behind her, but at the same time she makes good choices and allies herself with the right people. But she's had a lot of luck and a lot of shrewd choices.
Yeah.
A lot of good advice.
She's been very powerful, I think.
Dario said something to her in the episode that you don't say unless you're banging the queen. But he said the mother of dragons with no dragons is no queen. Yeah, I mean, that's really cutting, you know. And
the dragons
true.
Are representing her power.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, they always, once every four or five episodes, they always say, remind us that the whole King's Landing thing, when, is it Aegon the Conqueror? Whoever came in with the dragons. There, you know, he leveled the city or part of the city, and it was because of the dragons that he ended up on the throne. So they, once in a while, they remind us, like, dragons are a game changer, you know.
But do you remember the size of the skulls of those dragon heads? I mean, these dragons are still teenagers. Yeah. It's really something to think about. I wonder too, with Daenerys, if her purity is a part of her power or part of her weakness. I mean, she is representative of purity. I mean, the white hair, the beautiful dresses, and she has real purity of thought. She has real clarity of vision.
She won't go topless anymore.
Oh, man.
Terrible.
Is that true?
Well, she was clutching.
Yeah.
When she's in bed with... I mean, she did her one scene, but, oh, well, that's... by the DVD, I guess you can freeze frame it.
You'll live. But anyway... Her purity.
But you're right. Exactly.
Is that going to help her or hinder her as she goes forward? It's hard to know. I mean, she is everything that, you know, Varys and others would dream of in a leader, you know, and I think that she's being very strategic. She's been traveling a lot, and she's kind of building her army, but she's somehow she's really stagnating. She's really gotten like mired down in this leadership role of leading, you know, an existing city. Mm-hmm. That's not where she shines.
It's not where she shines. You're right. But last season she said, never mind the Iron Throne. This is my gig now. You know, I'm going to free the slaves, handle the, you know, be these people's queen.
Yeah.
And she told that to, who was it? Her bear.
It was her Jorah.
Jorah.
Yeah. Sir Jorah, who I fear we won't see for some time.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, so she's like, well, I need to handle this mess before I do anything else.
Maybe she has to shake off some of her idealism in order to move forward,
mm-hmm.
get a little bit more aggressive.
She does, but ultimately she has to gain control of her dragons.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's what it really comes down to.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
One thing they didn't touch on yet, which I'm sure they're bound to in the next couple of episodes, is, and it goes all the way back to the Tyrion, like the pre-series Tyrion, like the Tyrion that existed prior to the start of this story,
mm-hmm.
where he was just kind of the bookish dwarf son of the Lannisters, mm-hmm. and like I think they establish it in the first couple episodes when they come to visit Winterfell in happier times, that he wanted to visit the library because he loved to read
mm-hmm.
stories about dragons and stuff. So mm-hmm. In addition to Varys's knowledge of his own sort of gamesmanship as a political mind, Tyrion himself is a personal expert on dragons from having read all the stories.
Oh, that's right. He'd be a perfect hand.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good point.
So they have to mention that sometime here pretty soon. If he ever runs out of wine.
still into the Arbor Gold, it looks like.
Yep.
Did he acknowledge what he was drinking?
No, that's just my guess.
I don't know if they drink Westerosi wines across the pond.
Wouldn't
they might?
I mean, I would think.
Yeah,
we drink. We do.
They drink rum chata in the north.
Yeah, apparently. That's why John made that face.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
Proper northern drink.
Well, so in terms of major characters this week, we only lost Mance. That's the only death of a semi. I mean, Mance maybe really only had like three or four prominent episodes.
God,
in this
I really
show.
Felt for him at the last two episodes. The real fear we saw was real fear too this time. It's terrible.
He was a noble spirit.
And he said, "I am afraid. There's nothing wrong with that."
Mm-hmm.
Mance is amazing. He will be missed.
And he did, like they said, united 90 tribes. That was his.
Life's mission.
His life's work, they said.
And that means that he had a real powerful presence and a powerful message. And now these 90 tribes, now what, you know?
Right.
I mean, because eventually, like, so when John's talking to Stannis up on the wall, it's like, you know, these people were just born on the wrong side of the wall.
Right.
Which, basically, they're going to find out that, you know, the real enemy here is not the wildlings.
Which
the wildlings are trying to escape from the same thing that we want to, that we built the wall for.
Where
which
the
is
fuck
the
are
White
they keeping 99,000 prisoners?
Yeah, it's just Tormund and like six other wildling-looking dudes that were present at the bonfire.
Yeah,
where are they?
The set of Castle Black is, although expansive for the TV show, it's not well represented. Just yeah, the 90 tribes are off screen. Always and forever.
Always and forever.
did we miss anything?
I think we recapped where we're at for the most part. I don't think any other noteworthy characters are going to die this season. Who's expendable at this point?
Well, you're asking that in this TV show.
Yeah, exactly. Are you kidding me? Yeah.
Everyone's expendable.
That's not the way to look at it.
Don't assume it.
I mean, we know, we're sure that Robb Stark isn't going to die because he's, you know, on the march and you know, Kat's not going to die. And Ed Stark's not going to die. I mean, he's like one of the main guys, you know, so they won't die.
Right.
Just don't kill Jon Snow.
You know, Jon and Arya and mm-hmm. Sansa have such powerful. I mean, they already killed Rob.
Mm-hmm.
You can't kill any more Starks in
this story. I almost wonder if at this point now the popularity of the actual show is going to dictate a little bit.
Definitely.
You know,
influence what, how the movie it'll
influence. You know, because like, what if in the arc of the story, it's time for Jon Snow to die. You know, there's going to be a discussion at a table.
Right.
How do we bend this around? How does Jon live?
See, that's the kind of thing that could happen on an HBO series where you build it, like on The Sopranos and Deadwood, there were characters that they built. TV shows, you know, they build up characters and then they just have a stupidly written episode that they just write them off arbitrarily.
Jesse Pinkman was supposed to be like a two character or a two episode deal pretty much in Breaking Bad, and he ended up as basically the second most important character in the whole.
They just really liked the way he said bitch all the time.
Yeah.
I can see, I mean, I feel like Brienne also has a destiny. You know, her relationship with Jaime alone needs more resolution than we have with it already. But I feel like her profile in the books could be ratcheted up a bit just because of the impact she's had on the show. But
that's right, because there's books still unwritten.
She better get some direction then.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're feeding into each other, which, I it's not necessarily a bad thing. It's not like there's this, you know, pristine purity of the books that, you know, that the TV show sullies. It's interesting to see that interplay.
Well, I mean, it's unique in the sense that the show is going to be in a position to make choices that are going to dictate beyond where the books are. And, I mean, presumably they're writing towards the same end game, but the show's in a position to make choices that are going to influence, potentially influence the books, unless Martin makes the master decision to ignore where the show went and do his own thing because he has his own ideas.
He could just stop writing.
He could drop dead tomorrow.
Right. Well, it's interesting because a lot of times you hear people say the book was better than the movie. You know, there's this real snobbery when it comes to books versus TV or movies. I mean, TV's even lower on the totem pole than movies, but it's interesting, you know, nothing's really precious because it doesn't even exist yet. So like the TV show is influencing the books are influencing the TV show. And I've started reading the books. They're quite good. There's a lot of rich detail. It's beautiful storytelling, well written. The show is well done, you know, so it kind of flies in the face of that kind of snobbery, you know, like, the movie was, it just wasn't as good as the book. Well,
but Martin as a creator too, I think he, and I've said this a few times, but you know, you get authors who have their work adapted. They're never fucking happy. Never.
Right.
They're always just like, you know, some go so far as to disconnect themselves with the project and, be loud about it, and he's just so
into it.
Stoked to have. I think he likes the attention. Mm-hmm. I think he likes the attention. I think he likes the fact that it's having an impact, and it's kind of being rewritten in real time. So there's a new mystery. You know, maybe he's got it all figured out. I know he's told the show creators how it's supposed to end. He's told them that in case something happens or in case the shows catch up to the books. But I think he is kind of childlike in his. Just like, oh, everybody likes me. This is great, you know? And I think he's real susceptible to that. And in this case, I think there's an innocence about that that is going to serve us because nobody knows what's going to happen.
Well, and the show doesn't seem to be suffering for that. The show just seems to be getting better and better. Now, the books, you mentioned earlier that there were a couple of books that weren't the best.
And five were the least well-received.
Okay, least well-received. And so are the books suffering a decline?
I think a lot of people
not because of the show, but just because he kept broadening the scope of the tale he was telling, and he got himself lost in it. It's just too broad, and he doesn't know how to start narrowing it back down.
Okay.
I mean, he had sort of an end game in mind, but he set out basically to at a certain point, which would have been about roughly after the third book. So right at this point in the story.
Okay.
His, like, at the point where Arya sets sail, he intended to take a 5-year leap and revisit the Stark children 5 years later, where they're sort of like fully grown. Because all the Stark children mm-hmm. are younger in the books mm-hmm. than they are on the show.
Yes, much younger.
They're much younger. So he basically envisioned, you know, getting the story to a point where this is the way things are, and then skipping ahead to 5 years where the Stark children reemerge as full-grown badasses and they come back and set things aright. But at the same time, you know, the White Walkers are doing their thing and invading, and all of the petty interpersonal, you know, battling between the Seven Kingdoms becomes besides the point in the face mm-hmm. of the supernatural horror that's descending upon them.
With winter, right? That's when we say winter is coming, we're kind of implying the time of the White Walkers. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So he got so invested in what was happening with everyone, mm-hmm. he wanted to press on and just...
And explain
everything.
Right.
So the fourth book was supposed to be what it ended up in the fourth and fifth book, but it got so voluminous
okay.
that he's just like, right. I can't. This has to be two books. So he just... Took these characters, put them in book four. Took these characters, put them in book five.
Oh, really? Yeah. But so there's characters that are only in one. Mm-hmm. Oh, gosh. Mm-hmm.
So
and the events of those two books run parallel.
Yeah.
So you really could read them one chapter in one chapter in the next.
That's what Mike is doing, actually. So we should talk to you about that real quick, and then maybe we'll wrap up.
Yeah. There's a thing. Let's explain it to Kat first. It's called the Feast. What is it? Feast Dance or?
Yeah, Feast Dance, and it's basically. So there's a website, All Leather Must Be Boiled is the site, and it has a suggested reading to basically read them where it would be like in a kind of a chronological order between the two books.
Okay.
And that way you get characters from, you can get, you know, all some of your favorite characters instead of like, mm-hmm. oh, well, I want to really hear Arya's storyline, but it's not in this book at all. So I have to wait like, you know.
800 pages.
Yeah.
I see.
So, yeah, like, because I think A Feast for Crows, the timeline is earlier. It starts a little earlier, but then ends before A Dance with Dragons. So, okay. like, but most of it overlaps. And then, because I'm done with A Feast for Crows now, and so all I have left is A Dance for Dragon.
Oh, you just have...
A Dance with Dragons which chapters 200
left. Pages or something?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, because there is some, like... Because Cersei and Jaime are in A Feast for Crows, but then now there's also some chapters in...
They creep back in at the tail end right. of A Dance with Dragons.
Because mm-hmm. A Dance with Dragons ends later than A Feast for Crows. So, but I think it's a good way to read the books. And there's a couple instances where you're like jumping ahead by like skipping a bunch of chapters, and then you go back and read like this chapter. But there's not much of that, but...
Okay.
It's definitely a good way to read them.
Was there any point where you read something that hadn't been established yet from a previous chapter because you were jumping around in the books?
No.
Okay. Mm. Well, good.
Interesting. Good to know.
Mike approved.
That's right.
Well, thanks for joining us this week,
thank
Kat.
Thank you for having
me. We might have to rope you into joining us again if you're not opposed.
I am not. This was fun. Thank you.
Awesome. All right, well, we're back in it. We've got how many episodes we got coming up this season?
Isn't it always
10, right?
Is it always 10? I thought
yeah,
it's always, most so HBO far. Shows are 13, but you're right, 10. So 9 more episodes. Join us, won't you?
See you next week.